Welcome back to Musings of a Book Collector. This is episode number 8. Although I enjoy talking about books and Svarim, tonight I will still be talking about books and Svarim, but it'll be a little different than previous episodes. I would like to talk about what's now going on in the country all over. It's called Book Week, Book Month, or now really Book Month. It's a very exciting time for me as a book addict. Get to buy books, see books, new books that just came out special for the sale. And I like to describe different books, discuss the book week in general, and different aspects related to it. This episode might be a little longer than previous episodes, so please bear with me. You could either listen to it on double speed if you don't do that already, or you could listen to it in a few different sessions. Okay, now I like this. By way of introduction, in Israel, sometime around Shavuos time, it depends on the calendar, but basically, there is a period of about 10 days, called Shavuot HaSefer, Book Week. What is it? Many of the companies that publish books of all types, what we call from and academic presses, many of these publishers, they make a sale and it goes on for, it can be found everywhere. You go into your local bookstores, many different companies are on sale and they sell them over there. Certain malls, all of a sudden you'll see, you walk into a mall and there'll be tables and tables of different companies that bring their books there to sell. Sometimes stores make their own sales. And if someone likes to buy books, there's a great time to buy because usually it could be heavily discounted than from the rest of the year. Okay. Now, I've been going to Book Week, I think I must have gone to something like 18 or 19 of them over the years, and this has always been a great experience for me as a book addict. So if you're a book addict, one thing is you have to be very careful. Obviously, you have to make sure that you have enough funds not to go overboard, which does that definitely happens to most of us book addicts. You go overboard, you buy too many books. You have to be careful, but it's an enjoyable experience for people that like to buy books. A lot of people like to go because they just like to see. It's just an incredible sight to see how many books, in some levels, it's like sort of like a Chalisha Sadas, how many books there are out there. Because when I say books and Svarim, I'm not talking about just your regular Svarim, but I'm talking about books, which is that there are tons of books, novels, books for children, books for adults, or on any subject, not only what we call Svarim or Jewish studies or Svarim, books that relate to Gedolim or stuff like, or that type of stuff, or historical stuff. Now, what happens like this, I don't know exactly when, I read about it a while back, but they started this thing called Book Week in the country, and over years it got more and more powerful, and it's everywhere. Okay, fine. So, what happens is, like this, basically, there'll be a set place that many companies, they rent out a table or X amount of tables that they need, and or you come into this like fair-like thing, and different companies, they bring a bunch of books. Some companies bring all their books that they have because this is one of the only times a year that a lot of books are not carried. People don't come and ask for a book that came out who knows how many years ago. Svarim stores don't stock, or even academic bookstores don't stock all books found in various academic or these publishing houses. It just would be crazy. There's no demand for a lot of these books. But sometimes, you know, they'll bring their wares. People will come and go... Oh, I'm looking for this old book. Do you have it? And this is one of the opportunities to sometimes get lucky, and you can buy books that have been buried in warehouses. Sometimes the publishers will bring it out over here. Okay. So there's dozens and dozens of tables from dozens of publishing houses at the different locations. There's one usually in Yerushalayim. There's one in Tel Aviv and other places throughout the country. Now, this is more what I would call the visitors at this sale are mostly Mizrahi, non-religious or even religious, Jews, but not you don't really find the from, what I mean the from, in Eretz Yisrael, very hard to be Magda exactly, but you can find black hatters or people from irregular yeshivas, don't come there in by the dozens. You do find people come, plenty, you know, yeshiva guys come that are curious about different things, they come, but in general, it's much more regular people throughout Israel, all types of Jews in Israel, Baruch Hashem, and that's what you'll find there more. But every once in a while, you'll see a Hasidish guy, sometimes in this full of ush, sometimes not, he's a little embarrassed, quietly looking through the various books, and it's always interesting to see all the people that come out to buy the different books. Okay, now, what happens is like this. You have, let's say, academic press. We'll go with the following press. Hebrew University, so there has a publishing house through them called Magnus Press. Magnus Press currently today publishes a crazy amount of books of all types. They could be books on math and sciences, history, all types of history, translations, and also books that relate to Judaism on a broad level. So, and they're also distributors of various smaller smaller groups of people that they distribute it. For example, there's something known as Mekitzer Nerdamim. This is something I spoke about in the episodes of Ruchan Kanievsky, where this developed, which years it developed, in the late 1800s, publishing of manuscripts of Rishonim, and they even have a journal which they publish every year or two. In recent years, sometimes last year, I think they had one, and this year they have one, which is basically a volume which will have in it mostly materials of Rishonim. That's not enough to be its own volume, but there'll be five or six such smaller pieces in this volume. So let's say this year, a volume from Mekitzer Nerdamim came out, it's called Kovetz Al Yad, and this Kovetz Al Yad, where would you buy it? Magnus Press. They distribute it. They don't publish it, but they distribute it. Okay. So now, if you go here to the sale, you can find Magnus Press has their booth with three, four full tables full of hundreds of titles that they bring out. Okay. So, and this is the way it works. Now, over the years, many people, many different companies used to come. And as time goes on, a lot of companies don't bother coming. It's expensive. You have to rent. You have to pay for these spaces of the tables, and you have to schlep all the stuff, and you bring your wares, and you have to have people to deal with people over there. So some companies, they just don't bother to come anymore. They make the sales in their storefronts or whatever, however they sell their books all year round. But they lose, on one hand, they lose out because hundreds and hundreds of people visit each day to these particular sales. So you're losing a lot of foot traffic that people would never have come. They're not going special to your particular store or wherever it is. On the other hand, it's very expensive for them. It has to be worthwhile. So in the end, over the years, more and more academic presses have stopped coming to these particular fairs. Sadly, let's say a place like Yad Nisim. I don't even know if Yad Nisim actually used to come, but Yad Yitzchak, it's called Ben Tzvi. This company publishes a lot of very valuable titles. They stop coming. Beis Medrash LeRabbanim, JTS, they also stop coming. And others also stop coming. But still, there are still many presses that do come. Okay. Now, this is, I'm describing so far, in general, this is more like the academic presses. As I mentioned, is Hebrew University's Press Magnus, Bar Ilan University. You'll find Bialik over here, and other such presses. Shazalm and Shazar, which has a beautiful, a nice amount of books also of Jewish academic studies, they also come here. Okay, what about what's called the Frum Company? So Meister of Cook, for example, they make their own sale at their own time every year, which takes place right after Pesach, and I spoke a little bit about that in the earlier episodes, and I spoke about a different... that there's a very big Mizrahi world sale, a type of sale. All the publishing houses of the Mizrahi world, all the different yeshivas, most of them, they come together at a sale that takes place in Merkez Arav at the same time as the sale Meister of Cook. It's right nearby. I spoke a little bit about that in earlier episodes. Now, but let's say there's a lot of Frum publishing houses, such as, most notably, there is Mechon Yerushalayim, Now, in recent years, a very strong, very big publishing house is Mechon Zichron Aharon. You have, let's say, Ofek publishes a lot of nice books. You have Ahavat Shalom. What do these places do? And then there's a bunch of people that they publish a few books a year, or even one or two books a year, but they have the distributors that supply with all the Svarim stores all over the world. With regular Svarim, is there ever a time that they go on sale? The answer is they also go on sale during this period of time. Until very recently, Mechon Yerushalayim and their distributor, who distributed other types of books besides their Mechon Yerushalayim titles, would rent out a store in Bnei Brak, and a storefront in Bnei Brak and Yerushalayim. And there you would be able to see tons of materials that came out from in the what's called the Haredi world, from Mechon Yerushalayim and all these other companies. There was, and some of the last few times that they did it, there was literally like small little rooms. Here you could see all the Ofek titles. Here you could see all the Eitzer HaPaiskim titles, whatever the titles are. Zichron Aharon, tons of titles had their own room. And Mechon Yerushalayim. And what would be is, a lot of times is a book that the distributor did not, sometimes an author would give them a book that he was not successful in distributing properly. Sometimes books that distributors had, they didn't do properly, you could get it here. And this was a great resource for getting a lot of books. But it's very expensive to maintain this. The Jewish market is slowly going, although publishing the amount of Svarim that have come out this year is mind-boggling. But the amount of sales is much smaller than ever before. Various reasons behind that, not for now. But the point is that because of this, because the people are buying less, it was just not worth it for a place like Mechon Yerushalayim to rent. It was too expensive for them. So what they do is they have mass advertisements all over that they're making a sale on their website, and they send out booklets, and the distributor adds in all his books, all the companies that he distributes for, and you could get it everywhere. And there are certain stores will give you the sale price of Mechon Yerushalayim if they deal with them, but they don't necessarily have them in the store. No one really stocks every item of Zichron Aharon or Mechon Yerushalayim in general, and all these other valuable Svarim that are out there. So there's been a major change. This is a change that just happened the past few years. That used to be, there would be like this similar fear where you could go to a place in Yerushalayim for many of these academic presses. So the same, and there used to be such a thing for the Haredi presses, much less. But the sales are going on, but there's not a place, a location to go to where one could see everything. And what happens is, because of that, there are many books that you won't ever get to see. It's very hard to basically get the book out there. And this is a problem that many authors are struggling with, and they feel very bad when they find out about this. It's very, very hard to get your book out there once it's published, especially if you're self-publishing it, not by a big company. And there's no real good solutions out there for this. Okay, anyway, this is just like a general, very, very broad general thing. Now, what happens at these sales is you meet all types of people. You could if you're interested. You don't have to. A lot of people keep to themselves. Over the years, I've met many different people. I used to, even from way, way back, I have such fond memories of going, even as a bacher, I used to go. My first year or two I went with my good friend Yaakov, Rabbi Yaakov Stahl. It was very comical seeing this American boy, me, with a Hasidic guy in his full garb, going through all the academic presses, buying books with huge bags, speaking in Yiddish and communicating. He would be my interpreter. He would communicate to the Israeli people, and we would buy out all the stuff. They used to get a good kick out of it, and those were the days long time ago. In those days, just two more points, and we'll get to the meat and potatoes, as they say. It's like this. Basically, they used to have, a lot of places would make Svarim so cheap. Like Magnus used to have some years, they would have books for 10 shekel, which is something like the equivalent of $2, $3. No more. Those days are over. Okay. Anyway, but the web, not only did the web change, but the web changed a lot. And this is what a point that I like to bring out, and changed a lot in the selling of Jewish books. And this is, what I mean is as follows. It used to be, when I used to go to Book Week, it was so exciting. I had no idea what I'm going to see. Because there was no advertisements, oh, this book is coming out, this is basically before the web was as powerful as it is today, and companies, you had to, you waited, you would come patiently. All of a sudden, you'd see at table A, let's say back to Magnus Press or Bar-Ilan Press, books you never knew would come. All of a sudden, you'd have 10 books you'd have to buy, and you have to struggle. Which 10 books could I, how many books could I afford, really? And you basically were in for a surprise. And you would come in, and literally, you could walk out finding out about tons of new books. Okay, obviously, sometimes you'd have to figure out which books you'd have to get away for the next year, and stuff like that. But now, what happened is also, is you would get catalogs, printed out catalogs, and they would say, oh, next year, another book's coming out, or middle of this year, another book's coming out. So it would help, it gave like a the whole scene of Svarim was much different than it is today. What do I mean? Today, the second a book comes out, many times even before it's in the hands of the publisher, someone leaks that it's about to come out, and sometimes with very good intentions, and sometimes the book gets held up in the publishing house. There was a book, academic book, that was mentioned for whatever reasons, however, got leaked out that it existed or was about to come out. And people sent around articles from said book, and the publisher was getting calls about it again and again and again. It took months. There was some major holdup in various aspects. This could be all types of holdups when publishing a book, not for now. And basically, the poor publisher, it was actually published at two places, were getting calls nonstop. When's the book out? I see articles from it and everything on the internet, people sending it around. And the answer is the internet changed it in a major level. It makes it also the speed. People in America used to have to wait months for a book to come out. Yeah, Big Eisen would bring in a few copies, but no one else bothered to bring in copies. Now you call up yourself, you call up the company, you'll pay crazy sums of money for shipping if you're a crazy addict, which there are, Baruch Hashem, many, there are people like that. But because you find out about the book right away, and then once you know the book is out, you can't sleep if you're a true addict, something I could very much relate to. Anyway, so the point is that a lot of changes have happened over the years to change the whole book market, and which changed how Book Week is. So now when you're going to Book Week, a lot of times you'll already know pretty much 95% of what you're going to see at the sale, and so it's not as exciting as it used to be. If I'm looking back all the years of going, some years it was just I would come back, I was like on such a high with a mound of books, I didn't know what to do with myself. I would go back another time. Now it's much easier because I know what I'm going to be seeing. Okay, sometimes you just want to wait for the best price now. Okay, now, this is just ramblings. Just one more side point to discuss, and then we'll get down to actual books and briefly what's going on at the sale. Is there early origins of a book sale, what's called the Yurid HaSvarim? So interestingly enough, there is, way before Israel, and that's as follows. How do you think books were sold for hundreds of years? Besides for bookstores, let's say you lived in a shtetl, for example. You lived in some little shtetl. How do they get books? So we always hear the stories. A peddler would come in with a wagon full of some svarim and other Judaica. People would buy it. Everyone knows. The Chafetz Chaim, for example, he peddled. He himself used to bring from place to place. He'd set up at shuls. He'd sell his own svarim. That's how he even made his parnasa. Remarkable thing when you think about it. The Gadol, the great, great Chafetz Chaim, the Mishneh Berurah, and other volumes of his, he sold it himself by peddling it from place to place. So this was the way people did it. But there was another way. Earlier on already, this is from after the invention of the publishing of books. And it seems that even in the times of manuscripts, there might have been such a thing. But basically, there was called a book fair. So, like everything else, there's a whole literature about it. Some point in recent years, I come across a book. It's called A History of the Frankfurt Book Fair. Okay? And this book traces how books were sold from the 1450s and onwards. Incredible history to read. And basically, what it would be is that publishers would come to, let's say, to Frankfurt, and they would bring their wares, and people would come from all over, booksellers, book collectors even, and they would buy books. That's how they would buy books. Okay, for example, 1593, Queen Elizabeth would send to buy books for the Bodleian collection at Oxford. Where did she send the people to buy the books? At the Frankfurt Book Fair. book collectors, these rich people that have massive collections, where would they would send their, they would have messengers that people, or agents that will buy books for them also, but also people that had stores. We have this documentation that there was something like, at a certain fair, there was 5,912 titles were sold at a specific fair. Okay, this is remarkable, and the book traces this, but it's not specifically relating to Jews. This is in general what happened, and he traces it from all different sources. For example, in 1570, in one of these early books, there was a book printed in 1570, talks about how three former school friends meet at and have a whole debate, which take place at a book fair. And it's this person translated into English here in this book. And we find that this is what people used to do. Go to, let's say, Frankfurt, as an example. And this was known that this is where people would bring, in those days they didn't have like a car and just come there 3 seconds and a plane and fly. Obviously, it took a lot of working out. You'd have to schlep by wagon, figure out what to bring, and accordingly, you would figure out what to publish, what to print, publish, and how to get it there, and then how to sell it. It was a very complex thing in those days. Now, what about Jews? So, interestingly enough, the Jews had what was known as, we're familiar with, it was the Vad Arba Ratzis. Now, the Vad Arba Ratzis used to meet at a Yerid, one of these types of Yerids, not necessarily in Frankfurt, but there was a Yerid that took place in different places in Poland. And this was a Yerid that not only Jews took part, this was a Yerid for all types of businesses. This is what people used to do, whatever they were selling, whatever they were busy dealing with. They would go to this Yerid. But also at this Yerid, Gedolim would come, and this is how different Gedolim would meet and discuss issues that came up that related to Klal Yisrael at the time and all these types of things. Like there could be a get controversy, let's say, and Rabbanim would meet at this Yerid, so they could even have a discussion face-to-face about it. And many other discussions were decided and dealt with at these Yerids, that the Vad Arba Ratzis is meetings at these Yerids. One thing that took place that was relative in these Yerids was Svarim. First of all, selling of Svarim. And we have, for example, Rabbi Fal Nassim Nata Rabinovich in his Maimer on Al-Tosas Talmud. So if he talks about how he shows documentation, how different publishers would rush to publish the books because they knew they had to finish their shas for the Yerid at the time, because that's when people used to buy Gemaras. Rosh Hashivas used to come, Talmidim used to come, a lot was happening, Shaduchim took place at these Yerids, and all different business deals also, and this was a place, the time that people would buy books at these Yerids. So this was not a specific Yerid for books, but books were sold as amongst other things, not as much as the Frankfurt Book Fair, which was devoted for books, but this was a general books, all books. So Professor Yisrael Halperin put out he wrote a whole article once showing all the different aspects of what related to Svarim that used to take place at these Yerids. For example, the history of Eskamas, a lot of Eskamas were given at these Yerids. Okay, this is its own parsha. Now, one other aspect of Yerid, and then we'll move on, which is that in a book called Hasifriya Shel Tnuas Haskalah that came out, came out in 2014. So there's a whole chapter over here also how in Leipzig, the Yerid HaSvarim, a whole study of 50 pages about the selling of Svarim at this fair, which was not only for Jewish books. Okay, anyway, bottom line is that the Jews bought books. Obviously, not every Jew was buying books. A lot of Yidden barely knew how to read or learn or had the finances to buy books. But there was such a concept of buying books at a book fair or at these Yerids, which sold all types of wares. Okay, so now let's go focus specifically. Back to the book fair. So I said you meet all types of people. Just two comical things, and that was it. You have to be very careful who you talk to. I was once looking at a book, and I start talking to the publisher about it, and then all of a sudden this lady overhears me. Luckily, I was saying good things about the book, and she goes, "Oh, you know something? Would you mind telling it to this and this guy it turns out it's her husband is the author of the book, and she wanted me to tell her husband that the book, that I liked the book a lot. I give him chizuk. Same thing, another guy comes over to me, and he sees me buying a lot of books, and he shows me a book. He says, maybe you want to buy my wife's book. I look at the book. Luckily, I did. It was a book about the Beis Yosef. So it had just come out, and there was no booth for this publishing house at the sale, but this guy was trying to, like, sell to a few people that he thought would want. He was a devoted husband. So there's a story of a devoted wife and a story of a devoted husband, authors of books. Okay. Anyway, you have to be careful, because you might be cursing out a book, and the guy next to you is the author. I met a lot of authors over the years, have a nice conversation with them, and a lot of times authors come to these sales to sign books. People like to have the signature inscriptions of the books inside the books. Okay. Now let's get to focusing about the sales, some of the books that have come out recently. All this I'm going to discuss very briefly. Some of these books we'll discuss much greater, at greater length, over the next bunch of different episodes. Okay, so number one. So I said already that it's not as exciting for me to come, because I pretty much know what's about to happen. So a few weeks before, literally right before, I'm starting to see a book comes out from Zalman Shazar Publishing House. They have very nice books over the years, and I look at this book. This sounds very exciting, something that I enjoy, this topic. So immediately I get to the sale. First place, one of the first places I get to is this place. It's from Professor Yaron Benna. It's called Acharis Davar. It's a collection of tzavas, Jewish tzavas, from the Ottoman Empire. Basically, a few hundred years worth of tzavas. He has something like 600 tzavas. It's just like an 85-page introduction all about the topic of wills, the wills that people left behind. And he publishes, including many, from manuscript. Okay, now, I'm interested in wills, tzavas, because many years ago, people always look for different areas. Where could you find interesting sources that have been untapped? So many years ago, someone told me one of the places you could find materials in tzavas. And there are a nice amount of tzavas. They have very interesting stuff you can find in these tzavas. The famous two-volume, someone says publishes one, Hebrew Ethical Wills from Abrams, with the Hebrew and English side by side, is famous. And Ahavat Shalom, published many years ago, Asher Yitzava, two volumes of different gedolim, their tzavas, full of fascinating information. So this is a new book with many tzavas, 600 about, with introduction, and now published by America's Zalman Shazar. Now, actually, what's interesting is that this is volume 100 of the Kuntresim series. What's the Kuntresim series? This is something that from the late 50s, maybe even, or 19, early 60s, different Kuntresim paperback books, pretty almost all, came out. Sometimes it'll be a manuscript, sometimes it'll be historical work on every area of Jewish history, relating to Jewish history, from the times of Chazal and onwards. Many, many different books that they've published. Most of them are always very hard to find. For a long period of time, there was like a room somewhere in Hebrew University, Hartzofim, that had dozens of these titles, but it was a very pain in the neck always for me to find it. Only a few times I found it, so I was able to get most of the ones that I needed. Anyway, so this is volume 100. I'm not sure if that means it's finished, that's it, no more. This series of those books are finished, or there will be more that are going to come out. Anyway, they published many, many interesting books over the years, and over time we'll get to discuss some of them. Okay, that was one book that came out from Merkaz Zalman Shazar. Moving on with Merkaz Zalman Shazar, one other book to mention, although they published a few others, is called Strimel. And this, I'm obviously going to say this word wrong, Bidezinkov. It's a focus about the Hasidic courts in Tel Aviv from the 1940s to 1965. Not so well known today, especially amongst us Americans, but in Tel Aviv was a major headquarters where had many of the great Hasidishim. It was a very frum area. People moved to Tel Aviv, and a lot of the great Hasidic courts, that's where they originally were. And this book deals with it at great length. Okay. I took a tour a few years back with Rabbi Brandeis from Machlelet Herzog, and he's originally from there, and we walked through a lot of parts of Tel Aviv, showing us what was what, which Rebbe was where, and everything like that. It's a very interesting time tour that we took in Tel Aviv at the time. And this book documents all about Hasidus and Eretz Yisrael in those years. Okay, so a lot of people, especially Hasidim, are very interested in the history of Hasidim, will find this book interesting. And people that are interested in Eretz Yisrael in that period of time, 1940s to 1960s, this is a very valuable such book. So this is Zalman Shazar. Okay, now I mentioned already Magnus, so let me just throw out there two titles from the various titles that they have. Number one is a book from Avram Halevi Frankel. It's called Maglei Chaim, Mizichrono Yisov Shel Mathematica Mathematikai Yehudi. Now, Avram Frankel was a great mathematician, and he wrote an autobiography. So this is the autobiography that he wrote in, translated into Hebrew. I believe he wrote it in German. It was translated, I think, at some point into English. And this is in to Hebrew with footnotes. Fascinating to the sea about a Frum Yid life he discusses in Germany. He was a friend of Albert Einstein, a great, great mathematician. He ends up coming to Hebrew University. And to talk about, see a Frum Yid, a Frum Yekesh Yid, life in Germany he focuses on. And you also get to see about Eretz Yisrael. He sadly did not complete his autobiography, but still is valuable nonetheless. Especially as it's well known, a great source to learn about Jewish history is through autobiographies, autobiographical accounts. Okay, so this adds to the otherwise long, long list of autobiographical accounts that are valuable. Okay, one other book that I was super excited when it came out. When I saw that it came out, it literally came out right before Book Week. It's called, the author is Eidid Kain, Saiviv Hailech HaRuach, Marchavim Tarbutim Be'ilamo Shel HaChida. So this book is 438 pages about the Chida. So you'll ask, what more could be said about the Chida that hasn't been said? The Chida is beyond prolific. As already this book discusses in the beginning, it has that the Chida wrote something like Meir Ben Yo, the expert of the Chida, has documented that the Chida has something like 126 works. This guy says it's closer to 106 according to his count, but bottom line is the Chida wrote a ton. However you slice it or dice it, as they say. Now, but this book is incredible. Even though Meir Ben Yo did write an incredible book about the Chida, but this book is a focus in depth, a deep dive into three fascinating works of the Chida. One is the Magil Toiv, which has been zeich in the past year alone to three new editions, which is his famous travels of when he was a mashulach for Eretz Yisrael, and he recorded all different things as he traveled. Interestingly enough, besides for three editions of the travels that have come out in the past year, there's been also manuscript information that also published by a different fellow. He's published two works that are related to the Magil Toiv L'Chida from the Chida's manuscripts that are further diaries from his travels. And they need to be worked on and compared and discussed in light of the whole story of the Magil Toiv. Anyway, so this fellow, Eidid Kain, he deals with the Magil Toiv. That's one thing. Another work of the Chida, most one of his famous works, Shei Magdailim. So he also has a beautiful chapters about that. And he also has a chapter, not only on the Shei Magdailim, on the Berkei Yosef, the famous work of, halachic work of the Beis Yosef, of the Chida on Shulchan Aruch. So he has a beautiful section devoted to that. All in all, I did not read the whole book. I started over Shabbos reading it. I've read articles of him, of his, based on his doctorate. I've read parts of the doctorate. I enjoyed it then. I'm sure that I will enjoy it, and I hope to complete it soon. Maybe discuss more aspects of it at a later date. Okay, so this is at these. So basically, Magnus and Shazar, these are places that have booths at the actual fair. Okay. Just to mention one other book, which I already discussed in earlier episodes, is from Zichron, because I was waiting for this book so long, and just to mention a book from Bialik. So it's called it's two volumes. One volume is called Divrei Bina, the other volume is called Zichronus, again, autobiographical account from someone who is born in 1723, dies in 1805. His name is Dov Ber Balichover. So this was a fascinating autobiographical account. Parts of it were known beforehand, but Professor Gershon Hundert, great historian, found the many missing parts of the manuscript and published now a critical edition, two volumes, part of what's called the Dorot series of Mice of Bialik that's now up to volume number 76. This series, just to mention, is small little paperbacks, has tons of great books. A lot of them are autobiographical accounts, but there's a wide range of subjects that these small books, this series, covers. A lot of them are in print, not all of them. So this is the two most recent volumes to that collection. A great book to if you want to read about that period of time. He took place in the debates of the Frankism, where they were going to come out against the Shas, to ban the Shas. He was involved with the debates. And there's a lot of other valuable information in his Zichronos, which I quoted in some earlier episodes. Okay, this is Mice of Bialik. Okay, a surprise. As I said, always you get surprises over here. So this was a nice surprise. The prolific Rabbi Yitzchak Shilat, who I don't know how he does it, keeps on publishing Bli Ayin Hara. I wish him a lot of halacha, a lot of atzlacha to keep on publishing. So over here, all of a sudden, I come across that he just published a new volume. It's called Medina. The title already made it that you automatically have to buy it if you're an addict. It's called Medina Halacha VeKavanas HaTorah, Sheish Sugyos Binyanim Medina VeHalacha. Okay, just hot off the press, and deals with Inyanim Medina Malchusa, Takanas Kahal, law. Bitachon Yisrael, the Geira stuff. Okay, a lot of it's almost close to 500 pages. Sure to be a very valuable contribution to the world of halacha. Rabbi Yitzchak Shilat, besides for being a great Talmud Chacham, he writes very clearly, very organized. So it's another valuable work that just came out, and I only came across it at this book fair. Okay. Now, in recent years, to mention, and I definitely cannot do justice to mention all the books that they put out this year or any year, a strong publishing house that has become a force to reckon with, would be the right words, I guess, is Magid Press. Magid, which they also have all different names. We're not getting into all the names and the differences in all the different names, but I just would like to mention four titles that I picked up now. I picked up even more. I can't admit all this hard documentation of addictions over here, but basically, the first book was in Hebrew. Okay, so this book is recently came across. I must have missed it, but it seems to be a very, very important book in light of today. Especially, I was very happy to see there's such a book exists, and that is, this book is called Nafshi B'Sheilasi Hilchos Briyos HaNefesh. Okay. So you'll wonder, what does that mean? If you're an American like myself, you're not going to really realize what that's referring to. Okay, so basically it's a book about mental health, written by Rabbi Edison Rosenzweig and Dr. Shmuel Harris. Okay, it's almost 500 pages, or actually it's a little more than 500 pages, and it seems to deal with all issues of mental health, which sadly is a very, very big issue in the world today. And it looks like a very well done job, properly footnoted, sourced, and dealing with all different aspects of this very sad but yet relevant topic today. Okay, so this was one great, I think, very nice pickup at the sale from them. Another book, I saw it recently, it looked very interesting, I picked it up, from Rabbi Avia Tabori, State of Halacha, Israel's History and Jewish Law. So this is a book which deals, so let's backtrack for a second. I actually spoke a little bit about it, that there's an interesting, I call it, I guess, a chap. Sometimes you have to, in order to get people engaged, you have to come up with a way that you come in and you want to give a shiur, and you give a shiur about a topic, sometimes a lachadik topic, it's not necessarily people are going to go, okay, whatever you say. Well, but you have to keep it relevant, especially people are very well aware of the current events. So if somehow something big happens in the current events and you could give a whole shiur about it, wow, then that will, especially if it's an exciting, hot topic, so to speak, people perk up and they listen very carefully. So one such person that cashed in on this, so to speak, is a Rabbi Lichtenstein. Headlines, he's put out three volumes, very, very nice stuff. We're basically If you're a rav or a person who wants to give shiurim and speeches to go through these books and use them, you'll be able to captivate your audience because the topics are great because they're about current events. So a similar vein, this fellow, he took stuff that relate to Eretz Yisrael. And basically, in each one of the issues, and he has something like over 30 different issues, he deals with hot topics relating to Eretz Yisrael, what the halacha says about these topics. Short pieces, but very nice, looks very well done. Example, the capture of Adolf Eichmann, 1961. So the chapter is, are there halachic issues regarding bringing murders to justice? Okay, with the famous story, Eli Cohen, 1965, the spy. So the chapter is called Our Man in Damascus. Eli Cohen, how far may one go to protect the state of Israel? And he deals with all the many different issues going through different aspects until 2019. And very, very, looks very, very interesting. Each chapter is a few pages with sources. And it's a very relevant book, especially for today. With current events, Israel, it's always a thing, even for people in America. It looks like a worthwhile book. Another worthwhile-looking book was from Rabbi Yitzhak Tursky, in other circles, people know better as Professor Isidor Tursky, the Talmud Rebbe, whatever you know him as, Perpetrating the Messiah, Halachic, Ethical, and Experiential Dimensions. Anyway, this is a book taken from him, which mostly focuses on his father-in-law, Rabbi Soloveitchik. Less than 200 pages, it looks like a fascinating book, with chapters that deal with all different things that he somehow tied into Soloveitchik, but it looks fascinating. Another book that I came across recently, which is published by them, and getting over here, it's nicely discounted. It's from Rabbi Aaron Lichtenstein, Values in Halacha, 6 Case Studies, a chapter about the Ramah, a chapter relating to more than one about the Chavis Yair, about Kaifin Amidah Stein, Lifnim Mishur Sadin. So Rabbi Aaron Lichtenstein doesn't need anyone's Haskamas. He was prolific, and he was unbelievable Yid and Talmud Chacham. So here we have a book. Most of these essays were never really published, but he wrote most of it. They discussed the whole origins of the book, close to 400 pages. Here again is another book picked up at the actual sale. Okay, moving on. I apologize. Around now is normally when I would stop. I'm just going to go a few more minutes to discuss a few more books, and then we'll end. Okay, so first, Machon Yerushalayim has been publishing books every year. They release around Book Week a bunch of nice books. So this year, just to mention 3 books of theirs, although we can mention many more, is number one. This was for me personally extremely exciting. I'm reading a Myria. This is their journal that comes out a few times a year. And it seems this is a discovery of a manuscript of the Chayyadam, a person I have been working a lot about. I hope to write a book about him. And basically, it seems to discover a manuscript of a book the Chayyadam wrote when he was younger. It's a collection of Torah that he heard from all different Gedalim of the time. Now, some of the stuff, it's unclear if he heard them, people told it over to him. But all in all, you'll find materials even from Yoni Snipeshitz, Reverend Brady, and other Ga'inim of the time of the Prague days. You can say what's less known about the Chayyadim, Reverend Danzig, is that not only was he a Yid that was in Vilna, but earlier he was in Prague. He's a Talmud of Yehuda and other Gedalim. And so this is a notebook, basically, that he wrote, it seems, early on, before he gets to Vilna. Survived, how it survived, there's obviously an interesting story behind it, what the significance historically of all different aspects of this sefer is also interesting, but this is in his handwriting, so we're not talking about a mistaken identity, and anyway, very valuable, fascinating discovery. So a lot of times, so what happens like this, I read about it in the Myria, Now, if you're familiar with Mechon Yerushalayim, they have their hands in a lot of different projects, and a lot of times a project needs funding. So not necessarily are they able, do they have the necessary funding for all the projects that they want at the times that they want. So sometimes you'll find a write-up in a particular journal, there's a particular issue of their journal, Maria, and you'll wait years and nothing happens, and then all of a sudden they'll surprise you, they'll put it out. A lot of such svarim, a lot of times they get surprised at the Shavua Sefer. All of a sudden, I read about this Maria. Okay, you know, I'm very curious about this. I was going to write to them, find out more information about this work. So they put in a few samples in their Maria, and lo and behold, I get an email a few weeks ago. It's out. Of course, I'm not waiting to the sale to get it. I have it sent to me right away that day. And Baruch Hashem, a fascinating work to get more insight into the Chayei Adam's early years. Mirtz Hashem, perhaps one time we will get back to discussing in more at length the significance of this work. Okay, that's one such work. Another such work that they published also was a great Yid, Reb Shloima David Kahana. He is known, I think, as the Varshava Rav, if I'm not mistaken, but they collected all his materials. He was very big into the Sugis of Agunais, and a beautiful volume of his Tshuvas and his Tyrus was published by them also a few months back. Okay, so this is another book. Best time to get it, the cheapest time, is at Shvua HaSefer. Okay, one last work is their famous series, Minchas Chinuch. They were the ones who basically reopened the Minchas, who made a whole mapecha in the learning of the Minchas Chinuch by opening up the legendary abbreviations and making it that thousands and thousands were able to enjoy Minchas Chinuch that were not able to up till that time. So now they have a project, which the volume 6 of this project came out just now, Beshulei HaMincha. What's Beshulei HaMincha? Basically, a iyun of Ha'aris on every word of the Minchas Chinuch. So volume 6. This is an incredible resource, especially a lot of people are very fond of this series. So volume 6 just came out. Okay, so this is Mechon Yerushalayim. Now, there's another Mechon that I would say deserves a lot of recognition, especially this year. I mean, this year alone. I mean, there some years, if I look back over the years, some years they have what I call droughts. And some years they are just beyond incredible how much they put out. This year alone, they've easily put out over 20 titles. This is Mechon Ahavat Shalom, headed by Rabbi Yaakov Hillel. So I've already spoken about, in previous episode, at length, about this work from Reuven Margolis, Toldos Adam, this new edition. So this is something I already spoke about, so I'm not going to speak about it again, but I'm just going to throw it out there, mention that it's available. I spoke about some of the works on Avos that they published. Okay. So let's just focus on two more titles that they came out now, and their journal Minagnozim. So first, Minagnozim is a beautiful journal of theirs. They started only a few years ago, but if you're a book collector, even if you don't care about the content, sometimes you'll fall into a book that's produced in beautiful, and it's gorgeous how it's produced. The covers alone, the paper, you get sucked into it. If you're an addict, it sucks you in. But a lot of these volumes have very valuable material. A volume that came out earlier this year had a lot of valuable material, and the one that just came out last week, Minagnozim, volume 17. They put out like 2 or 3 a year, going strong. And this is a lot of times based on materials that they have in their archives. They have tons of manuscripts. It's its own discussion on Parsha, what they have, mind-boggling. So, volume 17 just came out, including a section, I did not see it yet, but I hope to see it soon, very fascinating, about the manuscripts in the library of the Munkacher Rebbe. Okay, now that's their journal Minagnozim. Another volume that they have to get a lot of credit for. I heard about it, and then all of a sudden it came out. They told me it's coming out, but I didn't believe it was going to happen that fast. It's a new edition of the Magen Meisharim of the Beis Yosef, a work I'm very fond of. I hope to speak much more at length about this work and their edition also, but basically, they published the work. So first, let's just give you some background. They gave you a 130-page introduction about the significance of the work Magen Meisharim of the Beis Yosef. This is the Magen speaking to him and the halachic aspects of it. And then the actual work itself is 700 pages. So we're talking about 800 something, it's almost close to 900 pages, a beautiful edition of the Magen Meisharim, including new materials from manuscript making a very valuable addition to someone's library if you are into these type of things. It's the Beis Yosef. Can't go wrong. You have to keep in mind it's Aramaic. But all in all, very important. Okay, and now we have another work that I just like, all of a sudden I hear that they're going to do it and whatever, and then all of a sudden before you know it, I get an email, it's out. What is this? The Sefer Yekar HaErech from Rabbi Yosef Halevi. Rabbi Yosef Halevi was a Rav in his last place of being a Rav in Eretz Yisrael of Yafo. He was the Yafo Rav. Okay, now, I hope to discuss this work at much greater length, just to mention it, what they did. Mind-boggling is this, Rabbi Yosef Halevi was fascinated by the work of the Aruch, the early Rishon, what's known as a dictionary. Obviously, it's not just a dictionary. We'll discuss that. But what happens is, he wrote a massive running commentary, Be'iyun, on the Aruch, and put it al pi the Seder Hashas. So besides, he wrote this massive Pirish, he made it much user-friendly, because you're learning your Gemara, and you want to know if there's a piece on your Gemara, so you don't have to look through the whole thing, you open them up. So let's say you take out, you're learning Brachas, so is there a piece of the Gemara in the Aruch? And he somehow, incredible Bekiyas, he organized it, Alpi the Seder HaShas. Okay, Seder. That's one thing who said that, so, but then he has his Pirish is incredible. Now, how do I know about it? Because interestingly enough, in 1941, Maisid Rav Kook publishes volume 1 of this series. And then they published volume 2. It was on Masechta Shabbos. And I used it a bunch of times, looked at it. It's beautiful. Not known to people, but another volume of his materials, again of the Aruch, but based on the Midrashim of Chazal, the Aruch Al Pi the Seder, the Midrashim, came out a few years back in 2004. Okay, but so what happened? The manuscript existed on Gans Shas. Machon Havat Shalom publishes these four massive volumes that came out last week. So we got to give these people credit. They're just popping out the Sfarim. Very, very incredible. I hope they keep it up. And they're on sale. And during book week, it's usually very fairly priced. Okay, I just would like to mention two more works. Not because of a particular company that sells, published it. They were not published. Actually, one was, I'll say in a second. But basically, there also came out now for book week, because basically what happened is people realized this is the time, this is the season when people buy books. Svarim basically have become sold during seasons. There are droughts during the year. That means there's periods of time during the year Svarim don't really come out. Why? Much less people are buying during that period of time. And in the times that people are buying Svarim, you have to come up with a way that people are going to actually buy your Sefer or notice your Sefer. And that's the trick, which there's no good answer how to make people see about your book. So, I'm going to conclude with these following two Svarim. Number one was extremely exciting for me. I'm reading the Mishpacha issue for Shavuos. Yes, I admit, I've admitted this publicly already before. I read the Mishpacha magazine from time to time, different articles. And I see that there's a write-up that Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky's work on Nach, the next volume, came out. I'm like, what? So I write to the grandson, who's the person who published it, who worked on it, from the tapes. We have the tapes of Yaakov Kamenetsky, hundreds of tapes that he gave Navi Shir. And he transcribed them, this Rabbi Yosef Kamenetsky, son of Rabbi Nassim Kamenetsky. So I asked him, could he get it? Yes. He goes, no, it's going to be available very soon. The distributor wants to sell it. Dafka when? During Shavuot Sefer. So, Baruch Hashem, Shavuot Sefer, which is now called Chodesh Sefer. Immediately this came out, actually the first day. I was in Yerushalayim, luckily, and I got it right when it came out. Very, very exciting. Basically, Volume 2 came out first. So this is Volume 1. This is on Yeshua, Shoiftim, Shmuel Aleph, Shmuel Beis. Interestingly enough, Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky at the end gave Shiurim on Rambam Hilchos Melachim, so they included that here also. And this book, we'll discuss it maybe perhaps at a later date. Fascinating materials in here. And this grandson did it's a labor of love, hundreds of notes, but the notes are not only him. A lot of times the notes are pieces how he broke up Rabbi Kamenetsky, and we'll put some of the pieces into the footnotes. And of course the book talks about the introduction of the significance of learning Nach, learning the Hebrew language. Rabbi Kamenetsky is very fond of Diktuk. Look, Diktuk is a lot of plays an important role of this work. Interestingly enough, there's a nispach, an appendix at the end, Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky, about learning the Mendelssohn's translation. A very interesting section. A lot to say about it, but that's one interesting thing that caught my interest also. About a section about learning history, also full of interesting things from Yaakov Kamenetsky. A hesped on the Satmar Rebbe. All in all, this is, and some other things about Diktuk. All in all, this is a great book. Close to 700 pages. Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky does not need a skamas from any of us Americans. One of the great gedolim of the past, gedolim hadar of the past generation. And this is a valuable contribution on Nach, because we don't have that many works written by a gadol of such a stature in recent years on Nach. Okay. So I'm sure as I start going through it already, people should enjoy it and will love it. The last book is a book to mention, which also we'll come back to at greater length eventually. It's called Hayu Dvarim Me'olam, Hasleidus Agnuzim Shel Ha'olam HaTorani. From who? Rabbi Yisrael Danderovich. Rabbi Yisrael Danderovich, for those who follow the various Frum journals that are out there, which there are many today and more come out, he is one of the most prolific writers. He publishes in all of them, a range from everywhere. He's a Gerach Hasid who lives in Arad, I believe it is. I think if I'm not mistaken, he gives a shiur in Yerushalmi daily. And he's prolific. I think 1 year, Pesach time, he had submitted articles in like 9 Haredi journals at the time. And he got rishus from all of them. And he didn't publish. They put it together as a PDF of a booklet of like 9 articles. Unheard of thing, someone to get 9 articles published at the same time. Is very cute thing to do such a thing. But anyway, he publishes them from Heichal HaBesht, and you'll have him Dar Yisrael and Yeshurin all over, all types of stuff. He writes all different types of interesting things. Some people, a lot of people love his style. It's fascinating. It's very, very interesting. And this is 50 chapters of a wide range of subjects. I just started reading over Shabbos. I read close to 150 pages. So just one or two chapters that he gave. One is based on a Gemara in Saita. It seems that they say over that the Vilna Gaon said, the same Pshat in the Gemara, that there's a Tana or a Maira. That's also a question. But the Gra said that his name was Anna. Aleph Nun Aleph. Question is where in the how it fits in for that Gemara, but is there any other sources for that? So here we have a 15-page article dealing with it. Incredible, beautifully put together. And that's one chapter that I read today. Another chapter was about Zichrona Livracha. So we usually we refer to Zichrona Livracha, or we assume it refers to someone who's dead. Here he has, and he puts it together, literally fascinating, I would say close to 30 pages, where he deals with it, if it's also spread on a live person, and debates, and bibliographical stuff. Mamish, very, very well put together. He writes it very clearly. It's a very nice read. Okay? And just one other chapter of the ones I read that I'd like to just throw out there is taking pictures of dead people. And also, again, here, the piece, to me, one of the things that I like is not always like here so much for every single story or every single thing, but he sometimes has some fascinating bibliographical things, how he figures out and what he discovered here. There was an author wrote with a pen name, which was very, very common in those days. People used to have these initials, and always the question is, who is the person? And there's a famous book, It's About the Shame, excellent book. And there's additions to it. People used to write in newspapers in those days, and they had pen names, and who are those pen names? So basically, in this conversation, the question was, that someone posed in a journal, is if one could take a picture of, let's say, his parent, who just was nifted, doesn't have any pictures of him, he wants to have a picture. So it became a debate in the journals, and he brings all different materials and different things about it. So one of the people that was handling the question wrote it in Rosh HaTevis, and the question was, who in the world is he? So how he deciphers it and figures it out, it's a fascinating Torah bibliography. And in general, he mixes in a lot of different things, ideas from all different places. I actually found it amusing, is that, which we'll have to discuss more, is how he does use academic sources. He does quote even Shaul Lieberman, but he obviously will not use his name, but he quotes his title of a sefer, actually, Yevanim Yevanut, this is Greek and Jewish Palestine, and other academic sources. Some he does quote by name, full name, whatever, this is its own discussion. But anyway, it's a very well worth your money, a very, very entertaining work on, it's 50 chapters of articles of his. He's written much more, probably be many more books of his coming out. Anyway, this is published by Oiz V'Hadar Publishing House, and but they don't have their name on the side, but they, whatever, all the different things, stories behind the scenes about these type of things, but bottom line is, it came out literally last week, in time, no doubt, for Book Week, because it's a time that people like to buy books. Very well worth your money if you're interested in a real interesting read. You know, call it like a Shabbos after the challenge read, you sit down, a light read, but it's nice, and you get a lot of interesting ideas that you might have not known before. Just to compare it, just for lack of comparison, but a book to put in perspective is a very popular work, series, Eitzer Plius, Atayra. People like it. So this is what I call a much more sophisticated Eitzer Plius Atayra. Eitzer Plius on steroids, maybe. Anyway, you're just thinking of different names. Anyway, I enjoy the book. I am in contact with the author over the years, and I recommend it highly. Okay, Amir Tzashem, we will discuss some other works. A lot of the books that I spoke about today will be subject to greater discussions in greater length. Just wanted to mention a wide range of different books, from the range of academia to regular svarim, to give a little bit of a feeling for, especially for Yidden and Galus in America. This is yet another of many reasons to come make Aliyah just for Book Week alone. But you should know, interestingly enough, there were people, I don't see it so often now, that used to come for Book Week. They made a cheshbon that it's worth it to come Book Week. You know, you get to come in, you visit, maybe you have kids, you visit. And it's cheaper if you buy the books yourself than if you, you know, buy them in America direct from the distributors and everything. So, just a comical, people made these cheshbonis. Today, I don't know if it's really so true, because you only allow one suitcase back, and shipping and everything, and traveling. I don't know if it really comes out being worth it, depending on how many books you're going to buy. But I used to see, I make a list, which I publish on the Svarim blog, which basically takes me hours and hours to compose, of all the various interesting books that I see that come out. And some years I include the books of the whole year, so you can have like a snapshot of what happened, of a lot of the interesting books that came out over the year. And I find it fascinating when I walk around the sale, a lot of times I'll see someone with my list, using it as a shopping list. More than once I've said to the person, oh, you know who wrote that, and I smile. But anyway, this is an exciting period of time for book addicts, especially like myself. Thus, I apologize in advance for the length of time that this went, for close to an hour, a little babbling. But all in all, for me, which is the whole point of this, is to have some fun, talk about books and buying books. I hope you enjoyed. Send comments. We'll be in touch.